you sip your tea, the memory of all that. No, no, they can't take that away from me.
We present Old Times, a play by Harold Pinter, starring Dorothy Tutin as Kate, Robert Lang as Dealey, and Yvonne Briceland as Anna. Old Times.
No, no, they can't take that away from me. The way you hold your knife, do 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 do. The way we danced until three. The way you've changed my life.
Dark.
Fat or thin?
Fuller than me, I think.
She was then?
I think so.
She may not be now. Was she your best friend?
Oh, what does that mean?
What?
The word friend. When you look back, all that time.
Can't you remember what you felt?
It is a very long time.
But you remember her? She remembers you. Or why should she be coming here tonight?
I suppose because she remembers me.
Did you think of her as your best friend?
She was my only friend.
Your best and only.
My one and only. If you have only one of something, you can't say it's the best of anything.
Because you have nothing to compare it with?
Mm.
She was incomparable.
Oh, I'm sure she wasn't.
I didn't know you had so few friends.
I had none. None at all. Except her.
Why her?
I don't know. She was a thief. She used to steal things.
What things? Who from?
Me.
What things?
Bits and pieces. Underwear.
Will you remind her?
Oh, I don't think so.
Is that what attracted you to her?
What?
The fact that she was a thief?
No.
Are you looking forward to seeing her?
No.
I am. I shall be very interested.
In what?
In you. I'll be watching you.
Me? Why?
To see if she's the same person.
You think you'll find that out through me?
Definitely.
I hardly remember her. I've almost totally forgotten her.
Any idea what she drinks?
None.
She may be a vegetarian.
Ask her.
It's too late. You've cooked your casserole. Why isn't she married? I mean, why isn't she bringing her husband?
Ask her.
Do I have to ask her everything?
Do you want me to ask your questions for you?
No, not at all.
Of course she's married.
How do you know?
Everyone's married.
Then why isn't she bringing her husband?
Isn't she?
Did she mention her husband in a letter?
No.
What do you think he'd be like? I mean, what sort of man would she have married? After all, she was your best, your only friend. You must have some idea. What kind of man would he be?
I have no idea.
Haven't you any curiosity?
You forget. I know her.
You haven't seen her for 20 years.
You've never seen her. There's a difference.
At least the casserole is big enough for four.
You said she was a vegetarian.
Did she have many friends?
Oh, the normal amount, I suppose.
Normal? What's normal? You had none.
One.
Is that normal? She had quite a lot of friends, did she?
Hundreds.
You met them?
Not all, I think. But after all, we were living together. There were visitors from time to time. I met them.
Her visitors?
What?
Her visitors. her friends. You had no friends.
Her friends. Yes.
You met them. You lived together. You lived together?
Of course.
I didn't know that.
Didn't you?
You never told me that. I thought you just knew each other.
We did.
But in fact, you lived with each other.
Of course we did. How else would she steal my underwear from me? In the street.
I knew you'd shared with someone at one time. But I didn't know it was her.
Of course it was.
Anyway, none of this matters.
Queuing all night. The rain. Do you remember? My goodness. The Albert Hall. Covent Garden. What did we eat? To look back half the night. To do things we loved. We were young then, of course, but what stamina. And to work in the morning and to a concert or the opera or the ballet that night. You haven't forgotten. And then riding on top of the bus down Kensington High Street and the bus conductors. And then dashing for matches for the gas fire and then, I suppose, scrambled eggs. Or did we? Who cooked? Both giggling and chattering, both huddling to the heat. Then bed and sleeping. And all the hustle and bustle in the morning, rushing for the bus again for work. Lunchtime in Green Park, exchanging all our news with our very own sandwiches. Innocent girls, innocent secretaries. And then the night to come, and goodness knows what excitement in store. I mean, the sheer expectation of it all, the looking forwardness of it all. I'm so poor. But to be poor and young and a girl in London then. And the cafes we found. Almost private ones, weren't they? Where artists and writers and sometimes actors collected. And others with dancers. We sat, hardly breathing with our coffee. Heads bent so as not to be seen. So as not to disturb. So as not to distract. And listen. And listen to all those words, all those cafes, all those people, creative undoubtedly. And does it still exist, I wonder? Do you know? Can you tell me?
We rarely get to London.
Yes, I remember.
Do you drink brandy?
I would love some brandy. Listen. What silence. Is it always so silent?
It's quite silent here. Yes, normally. You can hear the sea sometimes, if you listen very carefully.
How wise you were to choose this part of the world. And how sensible and courageous of you both to stay permanently in such a silence.
My work takes me away quite often, of course. But Kate stays here.
No one who lives here would want to go far. I would not want to go far. I would be afraid of going far. Lest when I returned, the house would be gone.
Lest?
What?
The word lest. Haven't heard it for a long time.
Sometimes I walk to the sea. There aren't many people. It's a long beach. But I would miss London nevertheless. But of course I was a girl in London. We were girls together.
I wish I'd known you both then.
Do you?
Yes.
You have a wonderful casserole.
What?
I mean wife, so sorry, a wonderful wife.
Huh.
I was referring to the casserole. I was referring to your wife's cooking.
You're not a vegetarian, then?
No, no.
Yes, you need good food in the country, substantial food to keep you going all the year, you know.
Yes, I quite like those kind of things, doing it. What kind of things?
Oh, you know, that sort of thing.
Do you mean cooking?
All that thing.
We weren't terribly elaborate in cooking, didn't have the time. But every so often dished up an incredibly enormous stew, guzzled the lot, and then more often than not sat up half the night reading Yeats.
Huh.
Yes. Very so often. Well, more often than not. And the sky is so still. Can you see that tiny ribbon of light? Is it the sea? Is it the horizon?
You live on a very different coast.
Oh, very different. I live on a volcanic island.
I know it.
Oh, do you?
I've been there.
I'm so delighted to be here.
It's nice, I know, for Katie to see you. She hasn't many friends.
She has you.
She hasn't made many friends, although there's been every opportunity for her to do so.
Perhaps she has all she wants.
She lacks curiosity.
Perhaps she's happy. Are you talking about me?
Yes.
She was always a dreamer.
She likes taking long walks, all that, you know. Raincoat on, off down the lane, hands deep in pockets, all that kind of thing.
Yes.
Sometimes I take her face in my hands and look at it.
Really?
Yes, I look at it, holding it in my hands. Then I kind of let it go, take my hands away, leave it floating.
My head is quite fixed. I have it on.
It just floats away.
Katie was always a dreamer. Sometimes walking in the park, I'd say to her, "You're dreaming. You're dreaming. Wake up. What are you dreaming?" And she'd look round at me, flicking her hair, look at me as if I were part of her dream. One day she said to me, "I've slept through Friday." "No, you haven't," I said. "What do you mean?" "I've slept right through Friday," she said. "But today is Friday," I said. "It's been Friday all day. It's now Friday night. You haven't slept through Friday." "Yes, I have," she said. "I've slept right through it. Today is Saturday."
You mean she literally didn't know what day it was?
No. Yes, I did. It was Saturday.
Oh. What month are we in?
September.
We're forcing Kate to think. We must see you more often. You're a healthy influence.
But she was always a charming companion.
Fun to live with.
Delightful.
Lovely to look at. Delightful to know.
Ah, those songs. We used to play them, all of them, all the time. Late at night, lying on the floor. Lovely old things. Sometimes I'd look at her face, but she was quite unaware of my gaze.
Gaze?
What?
The word gaze. Don't hear it very often.
Yes. Quite unaware of it, she was totally absorbed.
It's lovely to look at, delightful to know.
I don't know that song. Did we have it?
You're lovely to look at, delightful to know.
Oh, we did. Yes, of course we had them all.
Blue moon. I see you standing alone.
The way you comb your hair.
Oh, no, they can't take that away from me.
Oh, but you're lovely, with your smile so warm.
I've got a woman crazy for me. She's funny that way.
You are the promised kiss of springtime.
And someday I'll know that moment divine when all the things you are mine.
I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. So tell me, why should it be true
that I get a kick out of you?
They asked me how I knew my true love was true. I, of course, replied, something here inside cannot be denied.
When a lovely flame dies,
smoke gets in your eyes.
The sigh of midnight trains in empty stations.
The park at evening when the bell has sounded.
The smile of Garbo and the scent of roses.
The waiter's whistling as the last bar closes.
Oh, how the ghost of you cling. They don't make them like that anymore.
These foolish things remind me of you.
What happened to me was this. I popped into a flea pit to see Odd Man out. Some bloody awful summer afternoon, walking in no direction. I remember thinking there was something familiar about the neighbourhood and suddenly recalled that it was in this very neighbourhood that my father bought me my first tricycle. The only tricycle, in fact, I ever possessed. Anyway, there was the bicycle shop, and there was this flea pit showing Odd Man out. And there were two usherettes standing in the foyer. And one was saying, "Dirty bitch." And the one stroking her breasts was saying, with a very sensual relish, and smiling at her fellow usherette. So I marched in on this excruciatingly hot summer afternoon in the middle of nowhere and watched Odd Man out and thought Robert Newton was fantastic. And I would commit murder for him even now. And there was only one other person in the cinema, one other person in the whole of the cinema. And there she is. And there she was, very dim, very still, placed more or less, I would say, at the dead centre of the auditorium. I was off centre and have remained so. And I left when the film was over, noticing, even though James Mason was dead, that the first usherette appeared to be utterly exhausted. And I stood for a moment in the sun, thinking, I suppose, about something, and then this girl came out and, I think, looked about her, and I said, "Wasn't Robert Newton fantastic?" And she said something or other, Christ knows what, but looked at me, and I thought, Jesus, this is it. I've made a catch. This is a true blue pickup. And when we had sat down in a cafe with tea, she looked into her cup and then up at me and told me she thought Robert Newton was remarkable. So it was Robert Newton who brought us together. And it is only Robert Newton who can tear us apart.
F.J. McCormack was good too.
I know F.J. McCormack was good too. But he didn't bring us together. You've seen the film then?
Yes.
When?
Oh, long ago.
Remember that film?
Oh, yes. Very well.
I think I am right in saying the next time we met we held hands. I held her cool hand as she walked by me, and I said something which made her smile, and she looked at me, didn't you? Flicking her hair back, and I thought she was even more fantastic than Robert Newton. And then at a slightly later stage, our naked bodies met, hers cool, warm, highly agreeable. And I wondered what Robert Newton would think of this. What would he think of this, I wondered, as I touched her profoundly all over? What do you think he'd think?
I never met Robert Newton, but I do know I know what you mean. There are some things one remembers, even though they may never have happened. There are things I remember which may never have happened, but as I recall them, so they take place.
What?
This man crying in our room. One night late, I returned and found him sobbing, his hand over his face. Sitting in the armchair, all crumpled in the armchair. And Katie sitting on the bed with a mug of coffee. And no one spoke to me, no one spoke, no one looked up. There was nothing I could do. I undressed and switched out the light and got into my bed. The curtains were thin. The light from the street came in and flicked on the wall. There was a slight breeze. The curtains occasionally shook. There was nothing but sobbing. Suddenly it stopped. The man came over to me quickly, looked down at me. But I would have absolutely nothing to do with him. Nothing. No, no. I'm quite wrong. He didn't move quickly. That's quite wrong. He moved very slowly. The light was bad and stopped. He stood in the center of the room. He looked at us both, at our beds. Then he turned towards me. He approached my bed. He bent down over me. But I would have nothing to do with him. Absolutely nothing.
What kind of man was he?
But after a while I heard him go out. I heard the front door close, the footsteps in the street, then silence. And the footsteps fade away, and then silence. But then sometime later in the night I woke up and looked across the room to her bed and saw two shapes.
He'd come back.
He was lying across her lap on her bed.
A man in the dark across my wife's lap?
But then, in the early morning, he'd gone.
Thank Christ for that.
It was as if he'd never been.
Of course he'd been. He went twice and came once. Well, what an exciting story that was. What did he look like, this fellow?
Oh, I never saw his face clearly. I don't know.
But was he... Was he...
You talk of me as if I were dead.
No, no, you weren't dead. You were so lively, so animated. You used to laugh.
Of course you did. I made you smile myself, didn't I? Walking along the street, holding hand, you smiled fit to bust.
Yes, she could be so... Animated.
Animated is no word for it. When she smiled, how can I describe it?
Her eyes lit up.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
You weren't dead. Ever. In any way. I said you talk about me as if I am dead. Now, how can you say that? How can you say that when I'm looking at you now? Seeing you so shyly poised over me. Looking down at me.
Stop that! Myself, I was a student then, juggling with my future, wondering, should I be Jesus, saddle myself with a slip of a girl, not long out of her swaddling clothes, whose only claim to virtue was silence, but who lacked any sense of fixedness, any sense of decisiveness, but was compliant only to the shifting winds with which she went, but not the winds, and certainly not my winds, such as they are, but, I suppose, winds that only she understood, and that, of course, with no understanding whatsoever, at least, as I understand the word, at least, that's the way I figured it. A classic female figure, I said to myself. Or is it a classic female posture. One way or the other, long outworn. That's the position as I saw it then. I mean, that is my categorical pronouncement on the position as I saw it then. 20 years ago.
When I heard that Katie was married, my heart leapt with joy.
How did the news reach you?
From a friend. Yes, it leapt with joy. Because, you see, I knew she never did things loosely or carelessly, recklessly. Some people throw a stone into a river to see if the water's too cold for jumping. Others, a few others, will always wait for the ripples before they will jump.
Some people do what? What did she say?
And I knew that Katie would always wait, not just for the first emergence of a ripple, but for the ripples to pervade and pervade the surface. For, of course, as you know, ripples on the surface indicate a shimmering in depth down through every particle of water, down to the riverbed. But even when she felt that happen, when she was assured it was happening, she still might not jump. But in this case, she did jump, and I knew, therefore, she had fallen in love truly and was glad. And I deduced it must also have happened to you.
Do you mean the ripple?
If you like.
Do men ripple, too?
Some, I would say.
She?
And later, when I found out the kind of man you were, I was doubly delighted, because I knew Katie had always been interested in the arts.
I was interested once in the arts, but I can't remember now which ones they were.
Don't tell me you've forgotten our days at the Tate Gallery, and how we explored London and all those old churches and all the old buildings. I mean, those that were left from the bombing. In the city, in south of the river, in Lambeth and Greenwich. Oh, my goodness. Oh, yes. And the Sunday papers. I could never get her away from the review pages. She ravished them. And then insisted that we visit that gallery, this theatre, or that chamber concert. But, of course, there was so much. It was so much to see and to hear in lovely London then. But sometimes we missed things or had no more money, and so we missed some things. For example, I remember one Sunday she said to me, looking up from the paper, "Come quick, quick, come with me quickly." And we seized our handbags and went on a bus to some totally obscure, some totally unfamiliar district, and almost alone saw a wonderful film called Odd Man Out.
Yes, I do quite a bit of travelling in my job.
Do you enjoy it?
Enormously. Enormously.
Do you go far?
I travel the globe in my job.
And poor Katie, when you're away, what does she do?
Oh, I continue.
Is he away for long periods?
I think, sometimes. Are you?
Yeah.
You leave your wife for such long periods? How can you?
I have a lot of travelling to do in my job.
I think I must come and keep you company when he's away.
Won't your husband miss you?
Of course. But he would understand.
Does he understand now?
Of course.
We had a vegetarian dish prepared for him.
He's not a vegetarian. In fact, he's something of a gourmet. We live in a rather fine villa and have done so for many years. It's very high up, on the cliffs.
You eat well up there, eh?
I would say so, yes.
Yes, I know Sicily slightly. Just slightly. Taormina. Do you live in Taormina?
Just outside.
Just outside, yes. Very high up. Yes, I've probably caught a glimpse of your villa. My work took me to Sicily. My work concerns itself with life all over, you see, in every part of the globe, with people all over the globe. I use the word globe because the word world possesses emotional, political, sociological and psychological pretensions and resonances which I prefer as a matter of choice to do without, or, shall I say, to steer clear of, or, if you like, to reject. How's the yacht?
Oh, very well.
Captain, steer a straight course.
As straight as we wish, when we wish it.
Don't you find England damp, returning?
Rather beguilingly so.
Rather beguilingly so? What the hell does she mean by that? Well, any time your husband finds himself in this direction, my little wife will be only too glad to put the old pot on the old gas stove and dish him up something luscious, if not voluptuous. No trouble. I suppose his business interests kept him from making the trip. What's his name, Giancarlo or Per Paolo?
Do you have marble floors?
Yes.
Do you walk in bare feet on them?
Yes. But I wear sandals on the terrace because it can be rather severe on the soles.
The sun, you mean? The heat?
Yes.
I had a great crew in Sicily. A marvellous cameraman. Irving Schultz, best in the business. We took a pretty austere look at the women in black. The little old women in black. I wrote the film and directed it. My name is Orson Welles.
Do you drink orange juice on your terrace in the morning and bull shots at sunset and look down at the sea?
Sometimes, yes.
As a matter of fact, I am at the top of my profession, as a matter of fact, and I have indeed been associated with substantial numbers of articulate and sensitive people, mainly prostitutes of all kinds.
And do you like the Sicilian people?
I've been there. There's nothing more to see. There's nothing more to investigate. Nothing! There's nothing more in Sicily to investigate.
Do you like the Sicilian people?
Don't let's go out tonight, Katie. Don't let's go anywhere tonight. Let's stay in. I'll cook you something. You could wash your hair. You can relax. We'll put on some records.
Oh, I don't know. We could go out.
Why do you want to go out?
We could walk across the park.
The park is dirty at night. All sorts of horrible people. Men hiding behind trees and women with terrible voices. They scream at you as you go past. And people come out suddenly from behind trees and bushes and there are shadows everywhere and they're policemen. And you'll have a horrible walk. And you'll see all the traffic and the noise of the traffic and you'll see all the hotels and you know you hate looking through all those swing doors. You hate it to see all that. All those people in the lights in the lobbies, all talking and moving. And all those chandeliers. You'll only want to come home if you go out. You'll want to run home. And into your room.
What shall we do then?
Stay in. Shall I read to you? Would you like that?
I don't know.
Are you hungry?
No.
Hungry? After that casserole?
What shall I wear tomorrow? I can't make up my mind.
Wear your green.
I haven't got the right top.
You have. You have your turquoise blouse.
Do they go?
Yes, they do go. Of course they go.
I'll try it. Would you like me to ask someone over?
Who? Charlie? Or Jake?
I don't like Jake.
Well, Charlie or...
Who?
McCabe.
I'll think about it in the bath.
Shall I run your bath for you?
No. I'll run it myself tonight.
combination like this is quite my most impossible dreams come true. Imagine finding a dream like you. You're lovely to look at. It's thrilling to hold you terribly tight. Oh, we're together, the moon is new, and oh, it's lovely to look at you tonight.
Here we are. Good and hot. Good and strong and hot. You prefer it white with sugar, I believe?
Please.
Good and strong and hot with white and sugar.
Thank you.
Like the room?
Yes.
We sleep here. These are beds. The great thing about these beds is that they are susceptible to any amount of permutation. They can be separated, as they are now, or placed at right angles, or one can bisect the other, or you can sleep feet to feet, or head to head, or side by side. It's the casters that make all this possible. Yes. I remember you quite clearly from the Wayfarers.
The what?
The Wayfarers Tavern, just off the Brompton Road.
When was that?
Years ago.
I don't think so.
Oh, yes, it was you. No question. I never forget a face. You sat in the corner quite often, sometimes alone, sometimes with others. And here you are, sitting in my house in the country. The same woman. Incredible. Fellow called Luke used to go in there. You knew him.
Luke?
Big chap. Ginger hair, ginger beard.
I don't honestly think so.
Yes. A whole crowd of them. Poets, stuntmen, jockeys, stand-up comedians, that kind of set-up. You used to wear a scarf, that's right. A black scarf. And a black sweater. And a skirt.
Me?
And black stockings. Don't tell me you've forgotten the Wayfarers Tavern. You might have forgotten the name, but you must remember the pub. You were the darling of a saloon bar.
I wasn't rich, you know. I didn't have money for alcohol.
You had escorts. You didn't have to pay. You were looked after. I bought you a few drinks myself.
You?
Sure.
Never.
It's the truth. I remember clearly.
You?
I've bought you drinks. 20 years ago. Or so.
You're saying we've met before?
Of course we've met before. We've talked before. In that pub, for example. In the corner. Luke didn't like it much, but we ignored him. Later we all went to a party. Someone's flat, somewhere in Westbourne Grove. You sat on a very low sofa. I sat opposite and looked up your skirt. Your black stockings were very black because your thighs were so white. That's something that's all over now, of course, isn't it? Nothing like the same palpable profit in it now. It's all over. But it was worthwhile then. It was worthwhile that night. I simply sat, sipping my light ale and gazed up your skirt. You didn't object. You found my gaze perfectly acceptable.
I was aware of your gaze, was I?
There was a great argument going on about China or something, or death, or China and death, I can't remember which. But nobody but I had a thigh-kissing view. Nobody but you had the thighs which kissed. And here you are. Same woman. Same thighs. Yes. Then a friend of yours came in, a girlfriend. She sat on the sofa with you. You both chatted and chuckled, sitting together. And I settled lower to gaze at you both, at both your thighs squealing and hissing. You aware, she unaware. But then a great multitude of men surrounded me and demanded my opinion about death or about China or whatever it was. And they would not let me be, but bent down over me, so that what with their stinking breath and their broken teeth and the hair in their noses and China and death and their asses on the arms of my chair, I was forced to get up and plunge my way through them, followed by them with ferocity, as if I were the cause of their argument, looking back through smoke, rushing to the table with the linoleum cover to look for one more full bottle of light ale, looking back through smoke, glimpsing two girls on the sofa, one of them you, heads close, whispering, no longer able to see anything, no longer able to see stocking or thigh. And then you were gone. I wandered over to the sofa. There was no one on it. I gazed at the indentations of four buttocks, two of which were yours.
I've rarely heard a sadder story.
I agree.
I'm terribly sorry.
That's all right. I never saw you again. You disappeared from the area. Perhaps you moved out.
No, I didn't.
I never saw you in the Wayfarer's Tavern again. Where were you?
Oh, at concerts, I should think. Or the ballet. Katie's taking a long time over her bath.
Well, you know what she's like when she gets in the bath.
Yes.
Enjoys it. Takes a long time over it.
She does, yes.
A hell of a long time. Luxuriates in it. Gives herself a great soaping all over. Really soaps herself all over. And then washes the soap off, sud by sud, meticulously. She's both thorough and, I must say it, sensuous. Gives herself a comprehensive going over, and apart from everything else, she does emerge as clean as a new pin. Don't you think?
Very clean.
Truly so. Not a speck. Not a tide mark. Shiny as a balloon.
Yes. A kind of floating.
What?
She floats from the bath, like a dream, unaware of anyone standing with her towel, waiting for her, waiting to wrap it round her, quite absorbed. Until the towel is placed on her shoulders.
Of course, she's totally incompetent at drying herself properly. Did you find that? She gives herself a really good scrub. But can she, with the same efficiency, give herself an equally good rub? I have found in my experience of her that this is not, in fact, the case. You'll always find a few odd, unexpected, unwanted, cheeky globules dripping about.
Why don't you dry her yourself?
Would you recommend that?
You'd do it properly.
In her bath towel?
How out?
How out?
How could you dry her out? Out of her bath towel?
I don't know.
Well, dry her yourself in her bath towel.
Why don't you dry her in her bath towel?
Me?
You'd do it properly.
No, no.
Surely? I mean, you're a woman. You know how and where and in what density moisture collects on women's bodies.
No two women are the same.
Well, that's true enough. I've got a brilliant idea. Why don't we do it with powder?
Is that a brilliant idea?
Isn't it?
It's quite common to powder yourself after a bath.
It's quite common to powder yourself after a bath, but it's quite uncommon to be powdered. Or is it?
It's not common where I come from, I can tell you. My mother would have a fit. Listen. I'll tell you what. I'll do it. I'll do the whole lot. The towel and the powder. After all, I am her husband. But you can supervise the whole thing. And give me some hot tips while you're at it. That'll kill two birds with one stone. Oh. Christ. You must be about 40, I should think, by now. If I walked into the Wayfarer's Tavern now and saw you sitting in the corner, I wouldn't recognize you. The way you wear your hat.
The way you sip your tea.
The memory of all that.
No, no, they can't take that away from me. The way your smile just beams.
The way you sing off key.
The way you haunt my dreams.
No, no, they can't take that away from me.
The way you hold your knife.
The way we dance till three.
The way you changed my life.
No, no, they can't take that away from me.
Doesn't she look beautiful?
Doesn't she?
Thank you.
I feel fresh. The water is very soft here. Much softer than London. I always find the water very hard in London. That's one reason I like living in the country. Everything's softer. The water, the light, the shapes, the sounds. There aren't such edges here. And living close to the sea, too. You can't say where it begins or ends. That appeals to me. I don't care for harsh lines. I deplore that kind of urgency. I'd like to go to the east, or somewhere like that. Somewhere very hot, where you can lie under a mosquito net and breathe quite slowly. You know, somewhere where you can look through the flap of a tent and see sand. That kind of thing. The only nice thing about a big city is that when it rains, it blurs everything. And it blurs the lights from the cars, doesn't it? And blurs your eyes and you have rain on your lashes. That's the only nice thing about a big city.
That's not the only nice thing. You can have a nice room and a nice gas fire and a warm dressing gown and a nice hot drink, all waiting for you, for when you come in.
Is it raining?
No.
Well, I've decided I will stay in tonight anyway.
Oh, good. I am glad. Now you can have a good, strong cup of coffee after your bath. I can do the hem on your black dress. I can finish it and you can try it on. Or I could read to you.
Have you dried yourself properly, Kate?
I think so.
Are you sure? All over?
I think so. I feel quite dry.
Are you quite sure? I don't want you sitting here damply all over the place. See that smile? That's the same smile she smiled when I was walking down the street with her. After Odd Man Out. Well, quite some time after. What do you think of it?
It is a very beautiful smile.
Do it again.
I'm still smiling.
You're not. Not like you were a moment ago. Not like you did then.
Anna? You know the smile I'm talking about.
This coffee's cold.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll make some fresh.
No, I don't want any, thank you. Is Charlie coming?
I can ring him if you like.
What about McCabe?
Do you really want to see anyone?
I don't think I like McCabe.
Nor do I.
He's strange. He says some very strange things to me.
What things?
Oh, all sorts of funny things.
I've never liked him.
Duncan's nice, though, isn't he?
Oh, yes.
I like his poetry so much. But do you know who I like best?
Who?
Christy.
He's lovely.
He's so gentle, isn't he? And his humour. Hasn't he got a lovely sense of humour? And I think he's so sensitive. Why don't you ask him round?
He can't make it. He's out of town.
Oh, what a pity.
Are you intending to visit anyone else while you're in England? Relations, cousins, brothers?
No, I know no one. Except Kate. Oh.
Do you find her changed?
Oh, just a little, not very much. You're still shy, aren't you, Katie? Hmm? But when I knew her first, she was so shy. As shy as a fawn, she really was. When people leaned to speak to her, she would fold away from them, so that though she was still standing within their reach, she was no longer accessible to them. She folded herself from them. They were no longer able to speak or go through with their touch. I put it down to her upbringing. A parson's daughter. And indeed, there was a good deal of Bronte about her.
Was she a parson's daughter?
But if I thought Bronte, I did not think she was Bronte in passion, but only in secrecy, in being so stubbornly private. I remember her first blush.
What? What was it? I mean, why was it?
I borrowed some of her underwear to go to a party. Later that night, I confessed it was naughty of me. She stared at me. Nonplussed, perhaps, is the word. But I told her that, in fact, I had been punished for my sin. For a man at the party had spent the whole evening looking up my skirt.
She blushed at that.
Deeply.
Looking up your skirt in her underwear. Hmm.
But from that night she insisted, from time to time, that I borrow her underwear. Oh, she had more of it than I, and a far greater range. And each time she proposed this, she would blush. But propose it she did, nevertheless. And when there was anything to tell her, when I got back, anything of interest to tell her, I told her.
Did she blush then?
I could never see then. I would come in late and find her reading under the lamp and begin to tell her, but she would say, no, turn off the light. And I would tell her in the dark. She preferred to be told in the dark. But of course it was never completely dark. What was the light from the gas fire or the light through the curtains? And what she didn't know was that, knowing her preference, I would choose a position in the room from which I could see her face, although she could not see mine. She could hear my voice only, and so she listened, and I watched her listening.
Sounds a perfect marriage.
We were great friends.
You say she was Bronte in secrecy, but not in passion. What was she in passion?
I feel that is your province.
You feel that's my province? Well, you're damned right. It is my province. I'm glad someone's showing a bit of taste at last. Of course, it's my bloody province. I'm her husband. I mean, I'd like to ask a question. Am I alone in beginning to find all this distasteful?
But what can you possibly find distasteful? I've flown from Rome to see my oldest friend after 20 years and to meet her husband. What is it that worries you?
What worries me is the thought of your husband rumbling about alone in his enormous villa, living hand to mouth on a few hard-boiled eggs, and unable to speak a damned word of English.
I interpret when necessary.
Yes, but you're here with us. He's there, alone, lurching up and down the terrace, waiting for a speedboat to spill out beautiful people, at least. Beautiful Mediterranean people. Waiting for all that, a kind of elegance we know nothing about. A slim-bellied, Côte d'Azur thing we know absolutely nothing about. A lobster and lobster sauce ideology we know fuck all about. The longest legs in the world, the most phenomenally soft voices. I can hear them now. I mean, let's put it on the table. I have my eye on a number of pulses. Pulses all around the globe. Deprivations and insults. Why should I waste valuable space listening to two...
If you don't like it, go.
Go? Where can I go?
To China. Or Sicily.
I haven't got a speedboat. I haven't got a white dinner jacket.
China, then.
You know what they'd do to me in China if they found me in a white dinner jacket? They'd bloody well kill me. You know what they're like over there.
You are welcome to come to Sicily at any time, both of you, and be my guests. I would like you to understand that I came here not to disrupt, but to celebrate. To celebrate a very old and treasured friendship, something that was forged between us long before you knew of our existence. I found her. She grew to know wonderful people through my introduction. I took her to cafes, almost private ones, where artists and writers and sometimes actors collected, and others with dancers, and we sat hardly breathing with our coffee, listening to the life around us. All I wanted for her was her happiness. That is all I want for her still.
We've met before, you know. Anna and I. Yes, we met in the Wayfarer's Tavern. In the corner, she took a fancy to me. Of course, I was slim-hipped in those days. Pretty nifty. A bit squinky, quite honestly. Curly hair. The lot. We had a scene together. She freaked out. She didn't have any bread, so I bought her a drink. She looked at me with big eyes. Shy. All that bit. She was pretending to be you at the time. Did it pretty well. Wearing your underwear, she was too, at the time. Amiably allowed me a gander. True blue generosity. Admirable in a woman. We went to a party, given by philosophers. Not a bad bunch. Edgware Road gang, nice lot. Haven't seen any of them for years. Old friends. Always thinking. Spoke their thoughts. Those are the people I miss. They're all dead anyway. I've never seen them again. The Maida Vale group. Big Eric and little Tony. They lived somewhere near Paddington Library. On the way to the party, I took her into a cafe, bought her a cup of coffee. Beards with faces. She thought she was you. Said little. So little. Maybe she was you. Maybe it was you having coffee with me. Saying little. So little.
What do you think attracted her to you?
I don't know. What?
She found your face very sensitive. Vulnerable.
did she?
She wanted to comfort it in the way only a woman can.
Did she?
Oh, yes.
She wanted to comfort my face in the way only a woman can?
She was prepared to extend herself to you.
I beg your pardon?
She fell in love with you.
With me?
You were so unlike the others. We knew men who were brutish, crass.
There really are such men, then? Crass men?
Quite crass.
But I was crass, wasn't I? Looking up her skirt?
That's not crass.
If it was her skirt. If it was her.
Oh, it was my skirt. It was me. I remember your look. Very well. I remember you well.
But I remember you, Anna. I remember you dead. I remember you lying dead. You didn't know I was watching you. I leaned over you. Your face was dirty. You lay dead, your face scrawled with dirt, all kinds of earnest inscriptions, but unblotted so that they had run all over your face down to your throat. Your sheets were immaculate. I was glad. I would have been unhappy if your corpse had lain in an unwholesome sheet. It would have been graceless. I mean, as far as I was concerned. As far as my room was concerned. After all, you were dead in my room. When you woke, my eyes were above you, staring down at you. You tried to do my little trick. One of my tricks you had borrowed. My little slow smile. My little slow, shy smile, my bend of the head, my half-closing of the eyes that we knew so well. But it didn't work. The grin only split the dirt at the sides of your mouth and stuck. You stuck in your grin. I looked for tears, but could see none. Your pupils weren't in your eyes. Your bones were breaking through your face. But all was serene. There was no suffering. It had all happened elsewhere. Last rites I did not feel necessary, or any celebration. I felt the time and season appropriate, and that by dying alone and dirty, you had acted with proper decorum. It was time for my bath. I had quite a lengthy bath. Got out. Walked about the room. Glistening. Drew up a chair. Sat naked beside you and watched you. When I brought him into the room, your body, of course, had gone. What a relief it was to have a different body in my room. A male body, behaving quite differently, doing all those things they do and which they think are good, like sitting with one leg over the arm of an armchair. We had a choice of two beds, your bed or my bed, to lie in or on, to grind noses together, in or on. He liked your bed, and thought he was different in it because he was a man. But one night I said, let me do something, a little thing, a little trick. He lay there in your bed. He looked up at me with great expectation. He was gratified. He thought I had profited from his teaching. He thought I was going to be sexually forthcoming, that I was about to take a long-promised initiative. I dug about in the window box, where you had planted our pretty pansies, scooped, filled the bowl, and plastered his face with dirt. He was bemused.
aghast. Resisted with force. He would not let me dirty his face or smudge it. He wouldn't let me. He suggested a wedding instead and a change of environment. Neither mattered. He asked me once, at about that time, who had slept in that bed before him. I told him, no one. No one at all. That was Old Times, a play by Harold Pinter, starring Dorothy Tutin as Kate, Robert Lang as Dealey, and Yvonne Briceland as Anna. Sound balance was by Keith Perrin. The production assistant was Joanne Hopper. Old Times was a BBC World Service drama production, adapted for radio and directed by Walter Acosta.